sound of rolling surf, children playing on sand, seagulls in flight. Today, these are the sounds you hear as you face the sea, looking down on the white beaches of Normandy. 20 years ago, on June 6, 1944, the sounds were different. It was just before daybreak. It was murky and overcast. And it was D-Day. D-Day, the most massive and complicated attack ever launched by man against man. It had begun, as all human violence does, with words.
Soldiers, sailors, and airmen of the Allied Expeditionary Force, you are about to embark upon the great crusade toward which we have striven these many months. The eyes of the world are upon you. The hopes and prayers of liberty-loving people everywhere march with you.
The voice of Supreme Allied Commander Dwight D. Eisenhower, firm, confident, resolute, had committed the Allied powers to a historic course of action. That commitment was duly noted by the enemy.
Achtung, Achtung! Wir unterbrechen unsere Sendung mit der Mitteilung, dass Kräfte der Alliierten einen Landungsversuch an der französischen Küste gemacht haben.
The German news bulletin reports an attempted landing by the Allies, says they have suffered heavy losses, and advises people to expect an announcement momentarily that the enemy has been pushed back into the channel. The announcement never came. News of the Allied action reaches the world. The American people hear about the invasion from a weary president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
My fellow Americans, last night, when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment the troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far.
Now the world knew about D-Day. It was a historical fact. They knew it had begun and they knew it would end. That was all. They didn't know how it would end or how it had begun. What events foreshadowed D-Day? What pieces of the past interlocked to create this portrait of conflict? Again, it began with words, the words of a disgruntled and fanatic ex-army corporal. It began in Germany in the 1930s with Adolf Hitler.
Wir wollen jetzt einmal ganz eiskalt und nüchtern die Interessen unseres Volkes verteidigen. 15 Jahre lang hat der Deutsche mit Weltbürgerei geträumt. Das hat er gehabt? Gar nichts. Hat sich die Welt um ihn gekümmert, das ist ja so lächerlich. Wir lassen mich nicht von diesen Schwätzern irgendwie dumm machen. Das geht nicht. Auch wir verlangen unseren Platz am Leben und an der Lebensmöglichkeit.
Hitler's doctrine of hate thrived and led to conquest after conquest. Until by 1940, only a few miles of choppy gray water lay between the Wehrmacht and Europe's last outpost of freedom. In August of 1940, waves of German bombers attacked the English coast, and the Battle of Britain had begun. Nazi raids on Britain rekindled the English fighting spirit, and Prime Minister Churchill made this promise.
Should the invader come to Britain, there will be no placid lying down of the people in submission before him, as we have seen, alas, in other countries. We shall defend every village, every town, and every city.
By October of 1940, it was apparent even to Hitler that his Luftwaffe, outfought by the RAF, could not clear the way for an invasion of Britain. Unexpectedly, and in violation of a non-aggression pact, on June 22, 1941, Germany invaded Russia.
Her Drachentöter 4 bis 6, hier Drachentöter kommen.
Hier Drachentöter 5, kommen.
Pushing further into Russia, continuing his attacks on Britain and pressing the African campaign, Hitler was now fighting a dangerous three-front war. Then on December 7th, 1941, Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt spoke to the American people.
Yesterday, December 7th, 1941, a date which will live in infamy. The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked by naval and air forces of the Empire of Japan. I ask that the Congress declare that since the unprovoked and dastardly attack by Japan on Sunday, a state of war has existed between the United States and the Japanese Empire.
World-shaking events followed quickly. The Japanese advanced in the Pacific. Then on May 6, 1942, Lieutenant General Jonathan Wainwright surrendered 10,000 troops to the Japanese on the island of Corregidor in the Philippines.
This is Lieutenant General Wainwright. Subject, surrender. It became apparent that the garrison of those forces would be eventually destroyed by aerial and artillery bombardment and by infantry supported by tanks which have overwhelmed Corregidor. After leaving General Homer with no agreement between us, I decided to accept, in the name of humanity, his proposal. You will therefore be guided accordingly and will, repeat, will, surrender all troops under your command to the proper Japanese officers. This decision on my part, it was realized, was forced upon me by means entirely beyond my control.
Hitler's Africa Corps under Rommel the Desert Fox rolled across the burning sands toward Britain's lifeline, the Mediterranean. Just when it seemed that Axis advances would continue, two major events changed the picture. Event number one, Montgomery stopped Rommel at El Alamein in October 1942.
Here we will stand and fight. There will be no further withdrawal. I have ordered that all plans and instructions dealing with further withdrawal are to be burnt, and at once. The great point to remember is that we are going to finish with this chap, Rommel, once and for all. It'll be quite easy. There's no doubt about it. He is definitely a nuisance. Therefore, we will hit him a crack and finish with him.
As Montgomery proceeded to carry out his plans for Rommel, Allied hopes in Europe changed with event number two. Winter came to Russia, and the Wehrmacht froze in its tracks. Winston Churchill marked the turn of events.
The jaws of another Russian winter are closing on Hitler's armies. 180 German divisions, many of them reduced to little more than brigades by the slaughters and privations they have suffered. They have, of course, the consolation of knowing that they have been commanded and led not by the German general staff, but by Corporal Hitler himself.
At the Casablanca Conference in January 1943, Roosevelt and Churchill agreed on a goal of unconditional surrender of the Axis powers. And in the Pacific, the long battle for Guadalcanal is finally won. But the bitter island fighting goes on. A Marine describes an island landing.
Just landed here about 15 minutes ago, and I don't know whether I sound scared or not, but I am. rifles popping or not. But there's rifles and just everything in the book.
Sicily is invaded by the Allies in July 1943, setting the stage for another important conference. In November, Roosevelt, Churchill, and Stalin formulate plans for the long-awaited invasion of France, Operation Overlord. In a radio address, FDR assures the French people of America's friendship and gives them a message of hope.
Mes amis qui souffrent jour et nuit sous le joug accablant des nazis, je vous parle comme celui qui en 1918 était en France avec votre armée et avec votre marine. J'ai conservé toute ma vie une amitié profonde pour le peuple français entier.
The idea of the invasion plan was simple. Control Cherbourg on the Cotentin Peninsula, and you control estuaries of the Seine, the channel beaches, and the channel itself, thus completing an open highway for pouring men and machines from Britain onto the European mainland, and ultimately into the heart of Germany. That was the aim of Operation Overlord. But inside help was needed from the underground fighters in conquered countries. A radio appeal was made to that great silent army.
This is Colonel Britton speaking. You in Europe, who listen to me now, know that we are working and preparing for the day when we shall cross that narrow strip of channel in the North Sea and help you drive the Germans out. Your offensive will be different from ours because you're a different kind of army. You wear no uniforms and your weapons are different from ours. But they're not less deadly. The fact that you wear no uniforms is your strength. The Nazi official and the German soldier don't know you. But they fear you. You are the unknown soldiers. Millions of you, men and women, a great silent army waiting and watching. The night is your friend. The V is your sign.
In the spring of 1944, England was crowded with men and armor. The harbors were jammed with vessels, the airfields teeming, the pubs filled with Americans, Canadians, and Britons having a little fun while there was still time.
Let them on, let them on.
While the troops in England waited, the underground fighters in France waited and listened for the radio transmission of the first line of a poem by the French poet Verlaine, The Long Sobs of the Violins of Autumn. It was to be the first part of the invasion code, the alert signal to the underground forces.
This is London calling in the European News Service of the British Broadcasting Corporation. Here is the news. But first, here are some messages for our friends in occupied countries. The Trojan War will not be held. John is growing a very long beard this week. The long sobs of the violins of autumn. Les sanglots longs des violons de l'automne.
The Germans were also listening and knew the code. They also knew that the start of the actual invasion would be the second line of the same poem. Wound my heart with a monotonous languor. And they were listening. On June 4th, 1944, 4 months after invading the Italian mainland, Allied armies roared into Rome.
From the Italian front, a late bulletin reports that Allied armor and motorized infantry roared into Rome, crossed the Tiber, and into the heart of the city. The departing German forces were exhausted and disorganized, and the eternal city was spared extensive destruction. Crowds of Roman citizens lined the avenues and streets of Rome to cheer the Allied tanks as they rolled through the city. Pope Pius XII appeared on the balcony of St. Peter's to give thanks that the city remained virtually intact.
For the German armies in Normandy, no action, only waiting and listening. For the underground forces, the same. Then on the night of June 5th at 10:15 p.m. British double summertime, a BBC broadcast with the long-awaited invasion signal.
Wound my heart with a monotonous languor.
The second line of the Verlaine poem had been transmitted to the underground and again was picked up by German counterintelligence. Unbelievably, the intercepted message was never relayed to the all-important 7th Army headquarters of the Wehrmacht. Operation Overlord would begin within 48 hours, and its climax would be H hour on D-Day.